slightly different type title, but the same content. Generation of Political Priority for Global Health Initiatives, a Framework and Case Study of Maternal Mortality, and I want to acknowledge my co-author, Stephanie Smith. This is a paper that was published last month in The Lancet. And I also want to acknowledge the MacArthur Foundation and the Center for Global Development for support for this project. We have two orienting questions in this study. The first is, why is it that some global health initiatives receive political priority and others are neglected? And the rationale for studying this is clearly not explained simply by the burden or seriousness of the crisis. We propose and develop a framework to think about this issue. The second is, what factors have shaped levels of political support globally for the Safe Motherhood Initiative? We apply our proposed framework to this initiative to try to understand this. By political priority, we mean specifically the degree to which international and national political leaders pay attention to the issue and back up that attention with resources. Clearly, political priority alone doesn't guarantee public health impact, but it facilitates impact, and therefore it's essential to investigate. So why is there variance across initiatives? Unfortunately, I had a lot of, here we go. Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot, the previous slide emphasized that there's a lot of speculation about that, but there's very little research. So we developed this framework first of all, I'm a political scientist by training, and we looked at social science research on collective action, and we conducted an in-depth case study of the Global Safe Motherhood Initiative. The main source of data were interviews with global policy community members. I've done other studies at the country level and local level, but this is at the transnational level. This is a formative framework, and we certainly don't think we've figured this out, it's being developed, and we would look forward to critique. It supplements another framework we developed from a five-country study that was in the American Journal of Public Health. This is the framework, and what I'm going to do is briefly go through each of these categories and factors. The categories are the key elements. The idea is that you can understand why an initiative gains political priority by thinking about the power of the actors involved. Secondly, the ideas and the ways they use to portray publicly the issue. Thirdly, the political context in which they operate that shape their actions, but they may not have control over these contexts. And finally, characteristics of the issue itself. What issues vary in their ease of generating political support? So let me go through each one of these factors briefly. On the Global Safe Motherhood Initiative, overall, that there's been very disappointing levels of political support, and this is due to problems in each of the four categories. But since 2007, there's been new momentum for this global initiative. So some people ask, why focus on the past if there's new momentum? Well, the argument is that unless you do focus on the past, you're not likely to transcend these problems. They haven't been fully transcended. So there's a careful need to look at the past to think about how to continue to build political momentum. So the first category is actor power. And the idea idea here is the first factor is actor power, and the factor is policy community cohesion. The idea is that policy communities, networks of actors involved in any given initiative, are more likely to have public policy impact if they coalesce, if they're tight. This enhances their credibility with political authorities. If they're constantly fighting with one another, they're not likely to be credible. The second factor is leadership. And these are the existence of key policy champions who are strong champions for the cause. And they matter because they bring coalescence to a community and can give guidance and strategic guidance to the initiative and mobilize authorities. The third factor are guiding institutions. And these are powerful coordinating mechanisms for any given issue with a mandate to lead the initiative. And they matter especially for initiative sustainability, not necessarily for getting it off the ground, but for ensuring that it continues to get political priority. The Task Force on Child Survival and Development is often acknowledged as a particularly effective, powerful coordinating mechanism. Finally, under actor power, the fourth factor is civil society mobilization. You know, I think I might just try to, I'm sorry. I'm going to try to give this without the slides, and I hope I can get my key points across. The idea here is that these are engaged social institutions at the grassroots level that press political authorities from the bottom to act, and they're a source of bottom-up political pressure on political leaders. If we look at this Global Safe Motherhood Initiative, I just went over four factors with respect to actors. Policy community cohesion, this has been very problematic in the Global Safe Motherhood Initiative. There's been much contention over interventions and other issues, although recently there's been increasing cohesion, but it's not fully there. The second actor factor was leadership. There have been many talented, and this is reflected in our interviews, many talented champions for this cause and advocates. However, there's a dearth of unifying leaderships. There has been no Jim Grant for Safe Motherhood. Guiding institutions. Historically, this has been very problematic for Safe Motherhood Initiative. There have been some very strong institutional guidance, but the UN, there have been conflicts in the UN over control of this issue, and no strong senior-level UN leadership, although some institutions may now be emerging. Finally, civil society mobilization. This has been relatively weak if you can compare it with respect to other issues like HIV/AIDS. Part of the problem may be in gender inequities. The people most affected by this, poor women who have little education, often are excluded from the political process, and this has hampered political support. I'll just read you a quote to give you a sense of difficulties in policy community cohesion in this initiative. One respondent said, "People became extremely defensive about their ideas. If you didn't agree with the idea, you were bad and wrong. It was kind of like President Bush. If you were against this idea, then you are a traitor," which gives a sense of what some of the atmosphere was like inside this policy community. The second category of factors that I want to focus on are ideas, the way issues are publicly and strategically portrayed. And there are two factors here under ideas. One is the internal frame, and the second is the external. The internal frame is the way a policy community, that is the network of actors involved in an initiative, understand the issue. If they understand problems and solutions in a common way, after careful deliberation, they're more likely to have political power because they will have credibility. The other idea here is external frames, and this is the public positioning of an issue, the way it appeals to political elites and leaders. And these matter because only some ways of positioning an issue make sense to political leaders. And it may make sense differently to different leaders. So for instance, the finance minister may pay attention to cost-benefit analysis, whereas a health minister may be more likely to pay attention to public health impact. So external framing matters a lot. What about ideas and frames in the Safe Motherhood Initiative? Well, there's been internally a long clearly a long-standing agreement that maternal mortality is a neglected issue that demands redress. But other than that, it's been, until recently, quite difficult to find points of agreement, especially surrounding solutions. What about the external frame, the public positioning of the issue? It's been very difficult to find a public positioning of the issue that convinces senior-level political leaders that this is an issue worthy of attention. This may now be changing. Women Deliver Conference, where I presented this actually last 2 weeks ago, was trying to get at that. Not sure they're there yet, but it's moving forward. The third category are political contexts. The third category of factors. These are the environments in which the actors operate, over which they may not have control, but they need to consider if they want effective political strategy. First factor under political context are policy windows, and what these are moments in time when conditions open for an issue favorably. They often follow, for instance, disasters like tsunamis or discoveries like vaccines or conferences, global UN conferences, and they matter because they present windows of opportunities for causes. An example of the MDGs, the Millennium Development Goals, included certain health goals, including maternal. This creates a window of opportunity for this cause. Second element of political context is the global governance structure for health for an issue. And by this, what I mean is any given sector, whether it's trade, environment, or health, has a set of global institutions, UN agencies, and others that function in that sector. Some of them work very well, and they collectively work very well, and others don't work well. Well, there's a lot of questions about the degree to which health has an effective global governance structure. I've created a collage of about 15 different organizations, from UNAIDS to the WHO to DFID, USAID, World Bank, Global Fund. I juxtapose them in a complex mess, which some people argue there's a complexity to the global health governance architecture that makes it difficult for health issues to get global traction sometimes. What about political context, category three that I'm talking about, and the Safe Motherhood Initiative? Well, policy windows clearly have opened, especially facilitated by MDG number five. Oh. The use this one. Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought this was the live mic. None of the technology is working for me today. Okay, so the global governance structure for health and for safe motherhood in particular has not been particularly favorable. There's been contestation, for instance, across the UN agencies for control of this issue that has not been productive. The fourth and final category is issue characteristics. What's the nature of the issue? How does that affect political support? And let me highlight three factors here. The first one being indicators. These are clear, credible measures of that demonstrate the severity of the problem. And often we think of these as monitoring devices, but they actually have political functions. If you don't have a clear number, you can't alarm politicians. You can't make them believe there's a problem. You have to generate these clear, convincing numbers to have a hope of alarming politicians and getting them to pay attention. The second factor is severity. So the idea here is that the larger the burden relative to other causes, other things being equal, the more likely it is that a cause will receive attention. I should mention a point I forgot to mention earlier. None of these 11 factors, or how many ever I had, yeah, I've got 11, are necessary or sufficient. These are all probabilistic relationships. Each one increases the likelihood of political support. None guarantees it. But severity is factor number 10. Large burden, again, policymakers prefer to devote resources if there are more deaths or higher morbidity. And finally, the 11th factor are effective interventions. And the idea here are these are means of addressing a problem that are backed by evidence and clearly explained. And policymakers, other things being equal, prefer to devote resources to things they can address effectively so that they can gain political credit. So for instance, immunized children, clear, simple intervention that's effective but it has more than a public health impact. It convinces politicians they ought to do it. What about issue characteristics in safe motherhood? Well, again, this is not a favorable situation. With respect to credible indicators, maternal mortality is notoriously difficult to measure. It's much harder than fertility and child mortality. This has made it difficult to monitor change and convince politicians. Severity. Of course, 500,000 deaths is a horrible tragedy and extremely high. The problem is if that's used as the indicator for the severity of the crisis and you compare it to HIV, TB, neonatal deaths, child deaths, it's much, much lower. So this doesn't help the cause politically. Effective interventions. Well, increasingly there's recognition that effective interventions do exist, but there's a lot of disagreement about which those are. And secondly, none of the leading maternal health epidemiologists, and I talk to them all, think there's a magic bullet. It's more complex than immunizing children. This politically makes it difficult. Just to give you a sense of comments about how issue characteristics affect the initiative, one respondent said, "We focus on uncertainties. That is the truth, but it will not convince the Minister of Finance." Second told me, "I would go with my ideas to a donor, and X, name omitted, would go with hers, and who was to say who was correct?" So at this point, I was going to present to you my framework up there with a third column that shows you the status of the Safe Motherhood Initiative and each of these 11 factors. Just the point to emphasize is if you look across all 11, there aren't many historically strong points in terms of how these factors have worked to help the initiative. But I don't want to end on a down note because there is a real level of new momentum for global maternal mortality reduction. MDG number 5, the creation of the Partnership for Maternal, Newborn, and Child Health, the increasing consensus over the past year on what needs to be done in order to address this crisis, the Norwegian-led global initiative for MDGs 4 and 5, and now the Global Health MDG plans. And finally, last 2 weeks ago, the Women Deliver Conference, where there were most of the health UN agency heads and ministers and others present. So, but this being said, I would just issue a caution. What are the key political challenges for the future for this initiative? The key point I would say is that, yes, there's a lot of enthusiasm, but there's a need to institutionalize that enthusiasm. The history of global health is one of issues rising onto the agenda and then quickly falling off. They don't stay there just by enthusiasm alone. They stay there when there are strong guiding institutions to get them to stay there. So I see 4 key political challenges. The first is to build on this growing policy community consensus about what needs to be done. Second is to find the external public positioning of the issue that resonates with political leaders. The third is to build strong guiding institutions for this issue at the global level. And the fourth, and this is a critical point, I haven't emphasized it in this particular talk, but I think the last presentation very nicely showed its importance, and that is looking at grassroots levels and civil society and local initiatives. And linking with these, because there's been a perception, this is, one respondent told me this is an initiative that's functioned at 35,000 feet. There are all these discussions that are completely divorced from reality on the ground. Let me just conclude by telling the larger question that I'm studying, and this using this in part as a case study to investigate this, is why is it that some global health initiatives attract political support internationally and nationally, and others get neglected? And again, there's a lot of people who think they know the answer. I've discovered tremendous speculation and very little scholarship. And so it's in that spirit that we're trying to propose a framework. We don't think it's right, but we just see it would seem to be an important question to ask that doesn't get researched. It's important for explanatory purposes. It helps us understand why and how issues get onto the global health agenda. But I'd also say it has practical value, because if we think about this carefully, we can develop guidance for struggling initiatives, including Safe Motherhood, on how it can get the needed political support. Thank you.
or Timor-Leste, that the Ministry of Health does not support advocating for a TBA at a delivery. Health Alliance International, we work very much with the Ministry of Health and follow their policies. So speaking from our program in Timor-Leste, we are not advocating for a TBA to assist with delivery. That said, there are TBAs in the community at the village level. They're called dukuns in Timor-Leste. They were trained underneath the Indonesian system. They have not received any training since Timor became an independent country. Women do use them. So it's an ongoing dialogue among folks like the RNGO and the Ministry of Health as to how do you approach that question when you want to advocate for a skilled birth attendance and a facility-based delivery while still most women give birth at home and most don't use a skilled birth attendant. But given our policy and how HAI works, we just support the Ministry of Health policy in the work that we do. I don't know if Marianne works with me in Timor on our Timor projects, and I don't know if you have anything to add.
First, I want to emphasize that a lot of the professional midwives did historically attend many home births. So, you know, they weren't traditional birth attendants, but they were often not in institutions. Secondly, in Guatemala, when I actually arrived in Guatemala, my intention was to work with an NGO that received MOH funding to do traditional birth attendant training. And that, from everything that I saw and read, had been the focus of the Ministry of Health interventions. And I would say, just kind of looking at the history and the challenges there, and pretty much as a layperson, because my expertise is in the history, given the volume of births, they need TBAs. And so anything that would leave them out, I think, would be a disastrous policy. But on the other hand, right now, the only other health person in the country who can attend births is a doctor. And so there's a big gap in terms of educational level and communication about birth between a TBA and a doctor. And because they're missing, you know, someone who, a professional who could bridge that gap, I think that will be a huge challenge.
Woman in the red sweater.
I don't know very much about the baby-friendly hospitals initiative, but I can assure you that no formula companies fund our birth-friendly facilities, if that's your primary question. Okay. Pardon me?
Yes.
point about the degree of contentiousness surrounding the issue shaping the level of political priority. Let me just give you a couple thoughts on that one. Indeed, abortion, safe abortion, is part of this issue, that makes things difficult. On the other hand, the other side of that is that it's about saving maternal lives, and that makes things easy, comparatively speaking. So you don't get some of the controversies surrounding like HIV/AIDS and some of the sexuality. So there's two sides to this. The thing I'm struggling with respect to your question is I don't know where to place this as a factor. Do I place it under issue characteristics or ideas? And this gets to some very deeper social scientific debates about social construction and material reality, which I won't go into here, except to say that by issue characteristics, I'm trying to emphasize objective external features of an issue, and by ideas, the way the issue is strategically and publicly portrayed, which gets to subjective features. Issue contentiousness, my gut tells me it should be under ideas and not issue characteristics.
Let me open a parenthesis. She's handing out an evaluation of the session that the International Health Group wants us to fill out. If you would fill it out, just leave it on your chair. I'll pick them up at the end. Thank you. Okay. Actually, I think the woman in the purple sweater had her hand up first. Something that Jeremy Schiffman said, I hope that these initiatives are doing what they can to do a fairly good evaluation of these efforts, because I think that's one of the problems with the TBA issues. There have been relatively few good evaluations. There are a couple, and I know that the meta-analysis that came out a few years ago basically showed that the TBAs had very little impact for the moms, but they did have more favorable impacts for the babies. I do think there have been a couple studies that have come out since then that maybe you were referring to Mary Ann, that are a bit more positive. So hopefully the folks you're talking about will do a serious evaluation of their work. Okay, other questions? I think... Yes, go ahead. And then the woman behind you.
Thank you.
perceived risk, definitely. I would not characterize that as an issue characteristic, to get back to the prior comment. I think that's definitely an idea. Risk, in my view, is a socially constructed concept. And one could but I agree with you about your basic point. Risk affects political priority. Risk gets constructed in certain ways. We could imagine that risk could be constructed in a way that works for maternal survival. The risk to societies of so many mothers dying, the harm this causes, it's just it hasn't been leveraged. Whereas people like Peter Piot of UNAIDS have taken the AIDS idea and constructed risk as catastrophic for the world. Maternal survival, people might want to think about risk, the better strategic portrayal of risk to generate priority for this cause. Advocacy too. Grassroots, I agree with you. This has been, some causes have mobilized from the grassroots level very effectively. Safe motherhood, with a few exceptions, there are some exceptions, but in general has not, and it's been disappointing. There's been the White Ribbon Alliance, but there's only been a few countries where grassroots has mobilized, and this may be connected with gender inequities and lack of access to the political process, but I hope we'll see more grassroots. We need more grassroots for this. Haven't explicitly, but I will. But let me throw out one idea for you. Two acute respiratory infections. SARS killed a couple hundred. Pneumonia kills a million babies a year. Guess which one gets billions of dollars? Undoubtedly, gender plays a major role here. One can imagine that if men were dying in childbirth, this would be on the global agenda. In fact, that it's women, it is not. The gender dynamics of this issue, though, are extremely nuanced and complex, and I think it bears mentioning that there are tensions among different gender communities in this issue. So, for instance, let me give an example. Women's rights advocates have not been strong champions for this cause. And some have rejected that this ought to be a cause. The term safe motherhood, how did that get that term? It was born under the Reagan administration. People came up with it because it was under Reagan and they didn't want to offend Reagan. So they thought, I'll get a nice soft term that everybody will agree with, safe motherhood. But the consequence of that was that women's rights groups never took up the cause effectively because they didn't like the term and the emphasis on women's reproductive roles. So this gets back to ideas and framing, and it's not clear that I have to say that those most committed to gender equity have done a good job for this. I'm looking at certain chronic diseases like diabetes, cardiovascular, neurological conditions. These are not on the agenda, and if you look objectively at burden, one might argue they're even higher than maternal, and they're getting less attention. As a maternal survival advocate, strategically, I would skirt that issue, because the position of neglect is advantageous for all causes. But I understand your point. It's an important point to raise.
So as far as staffing of the birth-friendly facilities, the staffing of the birth-friendly facilities is carried out by the midwives who staff the community health center. So the birth-friendly facility is built in a location that is next to, close to the community health center where midwives are on staff. In addition, there are two Cuban doctors. There are no Timorese doctors, or there's very few Timorese doctors. The Indonesians were most of the doctors that staffed the clinics, and when they became independent, the Indonesian doctors went home. The Cuban doctors also staff the birth-friendly facilities, but are really only called in when there's a problem. So that's staffing. Can you just ask your other question? I wasn't quite clear on. What we're doing with the ministry, we work in very close partnership. We're co-located with the Ministry of Health and talk. I mean, we don't really do anything without vetting it with the Ministry of Health and conceiving of the idea with the Ministry of Health and working within their policies in the country. When we show, we will report, when we do more evaluation of these, we will present that with the Ministry of Health as far as funding. If we get funding for more birth-friendly facilities, we don't start the process of building them until we go to the Ministry of Health and they sign off on it, essentially. We don't want to create a parallel system in the country as opposed to completely and absolutely and always working within the Ministry of Health system. So if we build more birth-friendly facilities, it will be because the Ministry of Health wants us to do it. It's open whenever a woman has to deliver a baby.
Noticed that in the subject index for Safe Motherhood, they're left out one of the sessions that's going to happen today at 12:30. It's session 3225, Maternal Mortality, the Shame of the World. So for those of you who are interested in this issue, there is another session that wasn't listed in the subject index. I want to thank our speakers and thank the audience for your great participation. Good discussion.